Shabbat Shalom. There are many sacred spaces in this world. I think one of the ones that often gets overlooked is the refrigerator door. Many people like to use it to put their children's artwork or to leave important notices. My parents like to leave it bare. We had a few magnets, souvenirs from trips, that's all that was there. So I would look at it often and see those magnets, and one of them said, "Never criticize your wife's judgment, because look who she married." A little over 3 years ago, I had a very big decision to make. I was offered a job at a small synagogue outside of San Francisco, and I was offered a job here to be an assistant rabbi at Sinai Temple. In fact, I remember very clearly the weekend that I interviewed here at Sinai. I don't know if you remember this, Cantor Gol, but after the Shabbat morning service during a Q&A with the board of directors, Cantor Gol asked me, "So what did you think? Were you comfortable with the service?" And I didn't know how to answer. But honesty is always the best policy, so I said no. I wasn't comfortable. I had never been in a synagogue that had an organ and a choir. Many of you know I grew up in a very small synagogue in New Haven, Connecticut. Maybe at its height, we had 200 families. My synagogue could never even afford a cantor. I'd never been part of a service with a cantor my entire life. The entire congregation of my synagogue could probably fit in this sanctuary with room to spare. So I had never seen a synagogue full of hundreds of people every Shabbat. So no, I had to tell him, I wasn't comfortable, but I was impressed. And I tell you all of this because I can be a creature of habit, and I was leaning towards that small synagogue that reminded me more of my childhood synagogue. But in Alicia's mind, there was no question. She said, "We're going to Sinai." Over and over again, she said it. And I guess you know what happened. She was able to convince me, and I'm not too proud to admit that she was right. This was the right decision to make. Sinai is really a unique place for many reasons, and if you don't get out to see other synagogues, then you probably don't realize how special a place Sinai is. I don't think that I'll ever work at another synagogue that is as diverse and does as much as Sinai. And I know that it's going to be a very strange transition going to a much smaller synagogue that simply won't have as much activity as Sinai. We'll have one Shabbat morning service. We won't have three or four. There's a young families group, there's a men's club and a sisterhood. But will we have an Israel Center? Will we have an exciting young adults group like Atid? Will we have a Chai Society, a hospice center, a Shiva committee, a Chevra Kadisha? I doubt it. God willing, we can build that synagogue up to the level of greatness of Sinai Temple. And I hope to do that someday because I have seen it in action. I've seen what it means to be part of a thriving community that gives members a multiplicity of points to join and be a part of this community. And Sinai really works because of this amazing partnership between you, the members, and the staff. I know that Rabbi Wolpe gets a lot of credit for Sinai's success, and he deserves it. But Sinai is made up of so many people who are dedicated to the synagogue. Without Rabbi Wolpe, I think Sinai would be rudderless. We would be without a vision. We would be without inspiration. And I personally need to thank him for his guidance and his mentorship these past few years. But today I want to recognize all the clergy, all the staff, all the people who work in the office, all the teachers, the maintenance crew. We have an amazing, talented group of people who work here at Sinai Temple every day, and they deserve my thanks and our thanks as well. But no matter how talented, no matter how hardworking all the staff here is, it would be nothing. It would mean nothing without you. Your leadership and your participation in the synagogue have made this synagogue the premier conservative synagogue on the West Coast. Conservative Jews all over the country, and I would even say all over the world, looked to Rabbi Wolpe and they looked to Sinai Temple to learn how to take their congregations into the 21st century. But what I learned, what really makes Sinai Temple special, is that you're the leaders of the Los Angeles Jewish community. Now, I'll give credit, there are some in some other synagogues. But what I really learned was that you care not just about how well your synagogue is doing, but you want to know how well, and you care, and you take care of how well the Los Angeles Jewish community is doing, and I would even say the greater Jewish community throughout the world, especially in Israel. You take to heart when we say, Kol Yisrael arevim ze lazeh, all Jews are responsible for one another. And that's a tremendous burden to shoulder. But you do it. And you do it with seeming ease, and you do it with amazing ability. Now, this is my last sermon at Sinai Temple, at least until Rabbi Wolpe invites me back. And in the Talmud, it teaches a person before taking leave of a friend should not finish off with ordinary conversation or joking or idle talk, but with some matter of halacha, so that he should remember him thereby. And since this is my final Dvar Torah, I want to share with you one of my favorite teachings from Pirkei Avot, from the Ethics of Our Fathers. If you ask any rabbi, they'll tell you that their best sermons have an audience of one, themselves. So I offer you this teaching because it's one that I think about often and I try to live up to. Hillel haya omer, ein bor yerechet, velo am haaretz chasid, velo habayshan lomed, velo hakapdan melamed, velo kol amarbe bisrara chachamim, ubmakom she'ein anashim, hishtadel liyot ish. The great Rabbi Hillel used to say, an uncultured person doesn't fear sin, neither is an ignorant person pious. A shy person cannot learn. An ill-tempered person cannot teach. Not everyone engrossed in business learns wisdom. And where there are no worthy people, strive to be a worthy person. I want to unpack this teaching with you this morning. So who's an uncultured person? They didn't have opera back then, so that's not what Hillel was talking about. I think that he meant someone who is both uneducated and doesn't have morals. Because there are people who are simple and uneducated, but they still know basically what is right and what is wrong. But he's saying if you both lack knowledge and morals, then you will not fear sin. You may stop yourself from sinning because you fear the punishment, but you don't recognize how sin hurts yourself and hurts others. What's an ignorant person? An ignorant person is the person who has knowledge, who doesn't have knowledge still, but does have morality, does have this basic sense of right and wrong. And so Hillel says an ignorant person can't be pious. Well, why not? So you're not educated, but you still do what's right and avoid what is wrong. Isn't that good enough? Well, Hillel teaches that piety requires the desire to improve yourself. We as human beings have to be self-reflective. Without that, we won't become pious. We won't be good people. A shy person can't learn. Why not? Sit in the back of the classroom, listen to what the teacher has to say. But a shy person asks no questions. To truly learn, we have to think. We have to analyze. We have to have curiosity. We have to be willing to question what someone says. Our brains may be sponges that absorb information, but they're also muscles, and they need to be exercised. An ill-tempered person cannot teach. Well, this seems obvious, so what is Hillel trying to teach us? I think he's reminding us that a teacher is not just a person who imparts knowledge, but a person who knows how to impart that knowledge. And people learn differently. Thousands of years before the concept of multiple intelligences, I think that Hillel realized that people learn in different ways. And a person who cannot teach in different ways shouldn't teach. Not everyone engrossed in business learns wisdom. This too kind of seems like an obvious point. So what is Hillel adding? I think he's reminding us that success and career and wisdom don't necessarily come together. Just because we're successful in career doesn't mean necessarily that we have gained wisdom. The author Sandra Carey put it well, I think, when she said, "Never mistake wisdom for knowledge, for one helps you make a living, but the other helps you make a life." Being wise, I believe, is a measure of our character, not our acumen. And he's teaching us that we should spend as much time refining our character as we do pursuing our careers. Now, I think about these teachings all the time. I strive to pursue knowledge and ethics, to learn about the world, to learn to do what is right. And to do so requires curiosity. It requires questioning. And I have to be a good teacher. I have to make sure that every student is given the opportunity to learn in their way. And I constantly remind myself not to confuse a successful career with a successful life, and to make sure to find balance. And lastly, b'makom she'ein anashim hishtadel liot ish, which literally means, in a place where there are no men, be a man. And this is perhaps the hardest challenge, and I think maybe this is why Hillel said, he qualified it by saying, try. Because it's difficult to be the only person in a room standing up when everyone else is sitting down. It's hard to be that lone voice when everyone else disagrees. It takes a lot of faith to be Nachshon and jump into the Red Sea and be the first one and have faith that God will split the sea. It takes a lot of courage to hear God's voice calling and say, yes, I'm ready. How many times have you heard something? Heard something that bothered you, that felt like an injustice, or simply was unfair? And you thought, you know, somebody ought to do something about that. I do it all the time. But how many times have we stood up and said, I'm going to do something about it? This is a midrash that I love that talks about a rabbi who spent all day praying to God about the ills of the world. He would say, God, there are children starving in the streets, or God, there are people suffering from terrible disease, or God, there are terrible wars being fought. And he would pray day after day, month after month, year after year. Finally, God let out a booming voice from the heavens and he said, stop, enough. I have done something. And the rabbi's overjoyed. His prayers have been answered. Humbly he asks, God, tell me, what did you do? Did you feed the hungry? Did you eliminate the diseases? Did you bring peace and stop the wars? And another voice boomed out of the sky and said, no, but I sent you. I don't want you to think of this as an exhortation to do something that you're not doing. But please think of this as a plea to continue on, because I've seen what this congregation can do. I've seen how this congregation has taken care of me and my family in our hour of need. I've seen this congregation take care of each other, take care of the state of Israel, take care of the hungry and the homeless in our own city here. But the fact is, we can't rest. The rabbis teach, Lo alecha hamlacha ligmor velo ata ben chorin lehibatel mimena. You're not required to finish the task, nor are you allowed to desist from it. I'm going to take up this mantle in a new congregation in Temple Ramat Zion in Northridge. Now, Temple Ramat Zion is a lovely congregation, but they've been struggling for the past years to find the right rabbi. And my hope is that I can take everything that I've learned here and bring it there. This opportunity affords me the chance to be a senior rabbi, and equally as important, it affords me the chance to stay here in Los Angeles and be close to Alicia's family. And it's no small matter that it also allows me to stay close to this family, because Sinai truly has become my family in the past 3 years. And I know it's going to be very strange next week, walking into a different synagogue, standing on a different bima, looking out at a different congregation and not seeing familiar faces. I'm not going to see faces of people who I got to officiate at their wedding, or people I got to officiate at their bar mitzvah, or at the funeral of a loved one, or at their adult bat mitzvah, or simply the faces of people whom I've prayed and studied with now for 3 years. I titled this sermon Lehitraot, See You Again, But Not Goodbye, because I don't feel like this is goodbye. I know that I will see you again here at Sinai and in the larger community, and some of you should still expect to get phone calls from me, especially you, when I need some advice and guidance. You have taught me a tremendous amount, but I know that I still have much to learn, and I do feel blessed that I am part of a community that has provided me with many mentors. So I bid you lehitraot, with the deepest gratitude and the deepest affection. You have been everything that a rabbi can ask for in a congregation, and like parents take pride in their children's achievements, if I am successful, God willing, in my new endeavors, I hope that you too will take pride, because you helped make me the rabbi that I am today, and I am so appreciative. Shabbat shalom, lehitraot.